Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Walk Your Talk with Leanne on Life Coach Radio Network. I am so honored that you have chosen to spend your evening with us here on this beautiful April the 3rd of 2014. My name is Leanne Parsons, and I am the Walk Your Talk coach, and I am one of over 20 coaches here on Life Coach Radio Network who bring shows to you each and every week, almost on a daily basis, on three different networks to encourage and challenge each one of us as we travel through this journey called life. And as the Walk Your Talk coach, I love to bring on my show here that goes live twice per month at a minimum, people that I see out in the world, in my local community, and within the coaching realm, who are really walking their talk. And my guest is no exception to that rule of mine for what I love to bring onto my show. I'm going to tell you a little bit about me, and then I'm going to introduce my beautiful guest to you. So what I do best as a certified professional coach is to help women whose lives have been touched by the tapestry of adoption discover the missing threads within the fabric of their stories and then weave them confidently together again into their own unique tapestry so that they can create a legacy of love for generations to come and really start living a legacy today that they would like to leave for tomorrow. Because the ripple effect is very, very huge, and we do have an opportunity to have a legacy now lived. And so I'm really honored to be able to share with you tonight. And I would just love to introduce you to my guest tonight. And I am so honored to have Shannon Etheridge with me this evening. Shannon and I are going to be chatting about her Women at the Well workshop and helping others overcome their sexual and emotional baggage to become more sexually confident wives and women. And you know, it's interesting. This is a hot button topic for a lot of people. And so I just want to put a disclaimer out there that if there's young kids in the room or, you know, you've got some folks around you that you're not comfortable them hearing or listening to this while we are sharing, there may be stuff that Shannon and I are going to be sharing that you might want to censor a little bit. So I just want to put that little caveat out there. So I had the privilege of meeting Shannon back in Nashville in November at the AACC conference, and I was very struck not only by her wisdom and her love for Jesus, but by her incredible passion to really move women forward in their healing and their discovery of who they were created to be. So Shannon's a million-copy best-selling author. She's an international speaker, a certified life coach with a master's degree in counseling and human relations from Liberty University. She's spoken to youth, college students, and adults since 1989. Wow, that's the year that my son was born. This week, actually, I'm going to put that plug in. We have a birthday. Happy birthday to my son, Jacob. He's going to be a quarter of a century old. So we know,
wow.
Shannon, you've been speaking for 25 years.
Yeah.
I love that. And, yeah, so super fun. Shannon's passions include challenging adults and teens to embrace a life of sexual integrity, encouraging married couples in their pursuit of sexual and emotional fulfillment, counseling women who have looked for love in all the wrong places, and equipping parents to instill sexual values in children at an early age. Shannon has authored not one, 10, or 15 books, but 19, including the best-selling Every Woman's Battle series about sexual and emotional integrity. And so, Shannon, I just, you know, I could keep reading your bio. You know, it's really long, and it's very vast, and it's super cool, but I just want to welcome you to Walk Your Talk with Leanne, and just thank you so very much for spending your evening with me here on my radio show.
You are so very welcome. I'm delighted to have the opportunity and very honored that you would ask me to share with your audience, and so thanks for having me along for the ride, and congratulations on walking your talk and all that you're accomplishing, Leanne. It's really exciting to see people who have been through some healing experiences themselves want turn around and want to heal others and encourage others in the ways that we've been encouraged and can comfort others in the way that we've been comforted. And so you go, girl. I'm excited to partner with you during this hour.
Well, thank you. I think we're going to have a beautiful conversation. And, you know, Shannon, when I did have the privilege of meeting you with Nashville, in Nashville, it was so fun because the first time that I had the privilege of meeting you that weekend was at a little coaches gathering in one of the rooms. And
yeah,
had
that Dwight Bain hosted.
Coaches. He did. He sure did. Thanks, Dwight. And so we had Georgia Schaefer, Kim Avery, we had you, we had Leslie Burnick, everybody spread out throughout the room. And it was super fun because those of us who were new, and it was our first conference, and if we had any questions for you, we were able to go up to each one of you and ask you questions and really get to intimately know you on a one-on-one basis. And I just really want to thank you for providing that opportunity for us. I had the opportunity of meeting so many wonderful Christian coaches at that conference, you being one of those.
Me
and your excitement.
Me too.
Your excitement and your energy and your love for coaching and for healing really, really spoke to me. And then your, my goodness, 19 books. Holy cow. I have
well, I'm embarrassed. We actually haven't updated the website. We haven't updated the website just yet. It's actually 22. But who's counting? You know, who's counting?
22. Well, there you
that,
go.
That just tells me that
I
we need
it.
To do some updates. But, yeah,
well,
between Waterbrook Press with the Every Woman's Battle series that I did alongside Steve Arterburn and Fred Stoker's Every Man's Battle series, and then with everything that Thomas Nelson has allowed me to push down the pike lately with the fantasy fallacy about exposing the deeper meaning behind your sexual thoughts, and my most recent one, The Passion Principles, about celebrating sexual freedom in marriage, I've just had so many amazing opportunities fall in my lap to speak life into people in regards to three main areas: sexual integrity, sexual intimacy in marriage, and spiritual intimacy with Christ. I feel as if the two things that are undeniably true about every single human being that walks the planet, regardless of they're male, female, red, yellow, black, or white, rich or poor, no matter where you live, two things are true about us. We are spiritual beings and we are sexual beings. And there's no divorcing ourselves from either one of those things. And as Christians, if we can learn to integrate our sexuality and our spirituality such that they function together and that our sexual activities totally line up with our sexual values within our marriage relationship, that is where real spiritual synergy with God and with our spouse happens. And so it is always my great joy and delight to encourage any woman who is wrestling with, you know, if why is she acting out of her marriage, or why is she tempted to act out of her marriage, or why has she shut down sexually in her marriage? You know, a lot of times women can swing to either side of that pendulum. They can either swing too far to the left and they start acting out either before marriage or during marriage, or they swing too far to the right and they just get so conservative and buttoned up and straight-laced and they can't even relax and let loose and have fun and experience pleasure in their marriage bed. I want to help women find that healthy middle ground where they can enjoy the freedom to be sexually intimate with their husbands with no guilt, no shame, and no inhibition.
Wow, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. That was just so eloquently put. And, you know, we can't divorce. I love how you said that. We can't divorce that spiritual and sexual part of who we are. They are integrated. And so, Shannon, I'd like to just really dive in to our time together here and kind of get to some nitty-gritty kind of deep questions here right out of the gate, because you mentioned something in your little intro right there that really intrigued me, and I'm sure it piqued the interest of some of our listeners. You mentioned two different things that can happen to women within the context of marriage that can cause separation or a wedge between themselves and their husband. And those two things that you mentioned, the first one was acting out, and the other one was shutting down. So before we dive any deeper in, can you define those for us?
Sure. Acting out basically means that you are channeling your sexual energies somewhere other than your husband, that you are flirting with coworkers, that you are in chat rooms, or you're looking for old lovers on Facebook, or you are going out of your way to have a rendezvous with somebody just to see what happens. They're like, it's amazing how women can stick their head in the lion's mouth and then pray, oh, Lord, save me from the lions, instead of just recognizing that I don't need to go into this lion's den at all. But so oftentimes when they do tiptoe into that lion's den, when they do start putting their face that close to the flame, it feels really warm and really inviting, and it is like a moth drawn to a flame. And they wind up getting totally enmeshed, totally entangled in an inappropriate relationship. So oftentimes I work with women who, you know, they never intended to have an affair. That was the last thing that they intended to do, but yet it's exactly what transpired as a result of her not understanding where the boundary line is. And so many women assume that unless I'm in bed with a man, I'm not being unfaithful to my husband. But the truth is that emotional connections, emotional affairs will lead you into bed super, super fast. And so we have to learn to guard not just our bodies, but our hearts and our minds. And so helping women live with emotional integrity in their marriage relationship is equally as important as helping them live with physical integrity. So that's the acting outside. And a lot of times it's a result of they've wore a label for a really long time. Like I know for me, I was very promiscuous from the ages of 15 until 20 years old. During that five-year span of time, when I sat down and made a list at my counselor's insistence, I was just overwhelmed at how many sexual partners I had wound up with. I never intended to have a list grow that long. But she pushed me. She said, Shannon, you have to recognize what all these men have in common before you can understand what you were looking for. And as I did this exercise, what I noticed is that all of these men on the list were significantly older than me and in some form of authority over me. And what that told me is that I was looking for a father figure. And it was funny because when I first walked into the counselor's office, she said, tell me about your relationship with your father. And I got angry. I'm not here to talk about that. I don't really have a relationship with my father. I don't really want one. And didn't see any connection between the dysfunction in my relationship with my dad and the sexual dysfunction that had been going on in my life. And I was actually, this was 7 years into my marriage. I had just been white-knuckling as a married woman. I thought that I would marry this problem away, that putting this wedding band on my finger would take away all that temptation. But it came rushing back in right about year five, six, seven, you know, that seven-year itch kind of set in. And I came very close to leaving my husband and two very young children in pursuit of the love that I felt entitled to. And I'm so grateful that I had a counselor who could look beyond my weaknesses and not judge me and just recognize my genuine needs, that I needed healing in my relationship with my earthly father, but first and foremost in my relationship with my heavenly father. And as I learned to look to Jesus to satisfy my emotional needs, then I was able to give grace and mercy toward my father for just the pain that he had been in throughout my childhood, and was able to actually initiate a pretty strong, healthy relationship with him over the past 15, 20 years. And so I'm just amazed at how when we look at why we act out, we actually see a lot of answers to the question of what have I been needing my whole life. And it's not sex. It's not an affair. It's not to be unfaithful to your husband and make a bigger mess of your life. It's to look beyond the fruit of what you want to do and recognize the root of why you would want to do that in the first place.
Yeah, well, congratulations on all the work that you have done, right? Not only in your, well, for sure, starting first and foremost within your own life and really, you know, taking that time to acknowledge where you were at, what you needed to do to get the help that you needed, right, to work through these issues. Because, you know, I really appreciate when you shared, Shannon, about the wedding band on your finger does not erase any of the emotional, physical, spiritual, or sexual baggage that you walked into the marriage with. And
yes,
so
totally
that,
right.
That's a, you know, that's just such a huge piece of what we want to talk about this evening, that I really appreciate you bringing that up and explaining to us what acting out can look like, because we don't just act out prior to marriage. This can happen after, like you said, after the ring is on your finger. And that shows
right.
up in our culture a lot. on both sides of the fence, with men and with women. So
it,
Shannon,
and it can come in such a subtle way too. Like one of the first ounces of conviction that was dumped in my lap was actually from my aerobics instructor, who said, "Shannon, you come to class dressed not to sweat, but to cause other men to sweat. Why are you?" He said, "You have a neon sign on your forehead that says you're hungry for attention and affection." And he was a recovering sex and love addict himself, so he was speaking the truth in love. And he referred me to this female counselor and said, "You know, you really." And I went through 6 months of intense group and individual counseling. So I'm just really grateful for someone who had the courage to speak that kind of truth and wisdom into my life before I did totally cross the line and blow it. But so many women, they just think, you know, well, you know, it's just a sexy little black dress, or it's just a little sports bra and, you know, spandex number, and but they can't admit that they're addicted to the attention that they get from men when they parade their bodies like that. And you need to recognize that that is an indicator of a void in your life. If you need men to look at you and lust after you and want to go out of their way to talk to you and that sort of thing, that is a huge dysfunction in your life that's going to spiral down if you don't stick a broomstick in the spokes of the wheels that are taking you in these directions.
Absolutely, and stop that wheel from spinning completely. Mm-hmm. Really, really appreciate you drawing attention to that, because there are, you know, when people think, you mentioned the word addiction, and when people think of the word addiction, the first place they go, right, is drug and alcohol. That's the first place they go. And, you know, that's what we have been trained as a culture to go to. But you and I are here, right, tonight to raise awareness on that there is another addiction out there, right? Sexual addiction, love addiction, attention addiction, that so many women can fall into, and like you said, in very, very subtle ways. And
Absolutely.
So thank you for being bold enough to share that on my show. You know, I often say there's really no topic that's off limits on my show, because the people that I bring on are walking their talk, right? You, you know, you've walked this, you've talked it, you've healed, and now you are progressing forward, you know, for 25 years helping others receive that healing and really kind of understand more about what's really happening within the context of their lives.
Yeah, and what I really want women to hear is, if you're feeling a little convicted by this and you're thinking, you know, gosh, I thought that I was the only one who hungered for attention and affection like that, or I thought I was the only one tempted to act outside of my marriage. No, you are so not alone. As a matter of fact, when I was trying to get my first book published, Women at the Well, so often, well, all 13 times, I sent in 13 proposals to 13 different publishers, and every single one of them said, "Well, this isn't really a woman's issue. This is a man's issue." And I would think, hello, what rock have you been hiding under? For every man that stumbles and falls into sexual sin, isn't there a woman stumbling with him? How do you think she got there? And oftentimes it's her that led him there in the first place. So I was so grateful when Waterbrook Press and Stephen Arterburn caught the vision that there needs to be an every woman's battle. And when that book reached the 500,000 mark and has been published now in 25 different languages, I still want to call up all those publishers and say, yeah, I don't think it was just a man's issue. I think that maybe after 500,000 copies, it really is a woman's issue, but I'm not that catty. But I say that for the benefit of all the women feeling as if they're alone in their struggle, because I think that a woman's struggle with relational and emotional integrity is just as huge of an issue as sexual integrity is with men. The same way that men are tempted to look at porn or to try to act out physically with women, the temptation to emotionally connect with another man and let him fill her cup and make her feel good about herself, that can be just as huge and powerful of a draw.
Absolutely, and I often have heard it equated to like this big vacuum that it's just kind of sucking them in because they are so hungry. You know, we've heard the term skin hungry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those different things that kind of can happen in a woman's life just because of perhaps past trauma, past behaviors, that kind of thing. So you really have defined this acting out for us so incredibly well. Shannon, I just want to take just a moment, because we are live. And oftentimes we have a caller or two that want to call in, and I just want to offer up that phone number to any of our listeners that if you are listening live and you have a question, a thought, or a comment for either Shannon Etheridge or myself, Leanne Parsons, please feel free to call in at 646 716-9397. So, Shannon, explain to us now, if you would. You've done, like I said, such a beautiful job on explaining what acting out is and what it looks like and the subtlety of that and how it can creep into our lives. What does shutting down look like?
Well, I think that so oftentimes it's women who have been on the left side of that pendulum swing that in an effort to correct their path, they will swing too far in the opposite direction, that they don't want to be a bad girl anymore because we've been told good girls don't. And so if we want to be a good girl instead of a bad girl, what does that equate to? Oftentimes in our minds, it equates to I'm just going to try to divorce myself from my sexuality. I'm not going to initiate with my husband. I'm actually not even going to respond to my husband because I want to be a good girl. Sometimes we feel as if we have to, that this is like our penance that we have to pay for the promiscuity in our past. But of course, it's not necessarily that she's acted out now that she's shut down. Sometimes women enter into a marriage relationship and that's the only man she's ever slept with, but she can still shut down when things in life just distract her attention a little too much, such as seasons of motherhood. You know, when you have children all around your ankles for hours and hours a day, especially when you're breastfeeding, the last thing in the world that you want to do is share your body with one more person. Or some women are just so immersed in their careers or their educational pursuits, and they sublimate all of their sexual energies in that direction to accomplish these things to make them feel better about themselves, but they forget about their human need for intimacy. They forget about their husband's human need for intimacy, and they just shut down sexually. They just lose touch with their sexual desires. They are numb to any sense of arousal, and they are not interested in trying to recreate that because sometimes life is just easier when you're sexually disconnected, in their minds, of course. You and I both know that, no, it's actually having a vibrant, healthy sexual relationship with your husband that brings you the most peace, the most stress relief, the most health benefits, et cetera. But sometimes it takes women some sort of big epiphany before she can arrive at that place. And until she's ready to let go of this identity that she's created for herself of being a good girl. So good, in fact, that she's not even sexual. Oh, that's sad. I think that's really sad.
Well, I so agree with you. You know, and I think within the church as well, that can be, you know, we can get mixed messages.
Yeah,
right?
It's like the Madonna complex.
Right. Explain that.
The Madonna complex
basically... I'm going to keep looping it in, yeah.
It's basically the notion that the more sexually pure I am, the more holy I am. Well, sexual purity is required of us outside of marriage, but there is nothing sexually impure about sex inside of marriage. In fact, the Bible tells us that we are not to withhold sex from our spouses. And so this notion of if I give up my, I mean, I have heard of women actually holding on to their virginity 5 or 6 months into the marriage. I can't believe that he stuck around that long. I mean, that takes a lot of patience on a guy's part, but that they are so hung up in their identity of being a virgin and that they just can't bring themselves to let that go because in their minds, now they're less of a person because they have been sexually active. No. It doesn't work that way. I mean, you're not even less of a person even if you become sexually active outside of marriage. Nowhere in the Bible is our identity or value or self-worth based on our sexual performance or lack thereof or the number of partners. I mean, when you look at the Bible, God used some pretty promiscuous women to do some pretty powerful things. And so we just have to, I think that as a society, we've so promoted this notion of virginity and sexual purity that now it's almost become a dysfunction. Not saying it's dysfunctional to be pure prior to marriage, but they're taking that commitment to virginity into marriage, and it doesn't work in that paradigm. It just doesn't work.
Absolutely. Yeah, we were created, right, we're created sexual beings. And, you know, when we are joined, husband and wife, that is a beautiful gift that we can give each other. And so can we stand in agreement on something, Shannon? Can we just say out loud, women, it's okay to initiate sex with your husband?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Initiate, respond, swing from the chandeliers if you have one and you don't have kids that are going to walk in and find you. Absolutely. We have to remember that sexual intimacy in a marriage was given by God before the fall of man. There was nothing sinful about it. There was nothing remotely sinful about it. They were naked and felt no shame. So really, we're most holy when we're able to return to that place where we can be naked with our husbands and feel no shame. That is what holiness is really all about in the marriage.
Oh, love that, Shannon. Thank you for standing in agreement on that with me. I really appreciate that, and thank you for your voice and your confidence. You know, I can really hear when you're sharing with us live here that, you know, you own this. You believe it, you teach it, and you walk it. And so thank you for that.
Well, I was just going to say I'm the mouthpiece of this ministry, but my husband is the backbone. My husband is the one who was so patient with me in those first 7 years and who paid for those 6 months of counseling and who has cheered me on to write all these books and to travel and speak like I do. So I'm just really grateful for the support that God has put in my life through my husband and my children and lots of other people who stand behind this ministry as well.
Beautiful. Yeah, the tribe is super important. You know, we couldn't do this without what I call it. I'm doing the little
village, finger
air quotes here. Our tribe. We need the village. We need our tribe. We need our people, our support team. And that's, I really want to encourage the listeners this evening that, you know, some of this stuff might be poking you a little bit, bubbling up some things for you. You know, reach out to a friend, reach out to a pastor, reach out to Shannon or myself, Leanne. We're coaches. We kind of get this stuff, and we're here for you. So know that you're never alone. That's one of my, you know, caveats that I always want to share is that we were never created to walk this life alone, nor were we created to do relationships by ourselves, because as women, we need other women to really help keep us, our perspective and our focus off of ourselves, onto the Lord, onto healing and releasing some of that emotional baggage that oftentimes, as well as sexual baggage, oftentimes can cause us to, like you shared, shut down or act out. And so, Shannon, my goodness, I'm going to give our phone number again here real quick. And if we have any listeners who would like to call in and ask Shannon or myself, Leanne, any questions, again, the number to call in is 646-716-9397, and we welcome your questions or comments. You know, Shannon, you also mentioned women at the well, and I would love it, you know, if you could tell us a little bit more about that phrase. You know, oftentimes if we are in the church, and we know what that women at the well story is all about. We really don't know her name or her age, but her conversation with the Lord is one of the most talked about in women's ministry circles and beloved stories in Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that is the title, right, of one of your books?
Yes, that was the title of my first book.
Your very first book. Okay, awesome. And as well as a workshop series that you are currently doing.
Yes.
And I understand that it talks a lot about what we have spent the first half hour of our time together talking about overcoming the sexual and emotional baggage so we can become more sexually confident wives.
Mm-hmm.
So please tell us a little bit more about your Women at the Well workshops, because for those who can't stand for the full hour tonight, I don't want them to miss the opportunity to hear about some of the offerings that you have. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, they can learn more about them at shannonetheridge.com by clicking the Women at the Well link. And Etheridge does not have an E in the middle. It's just F Ridge instead of Etheridge, Etheridge. But, yeah, this is actually material that I have been teaching since 1999. For a long time, I did it once a week for 12 weeks, and lots of women through the East Texas area had gone through it. However, a little over a year ago, I had a brainstorm that instead of dividing it up into 12 weeks where only local women could experience it, maybe I could put it all together in a kamikaze 4-day experience. And so about 5 or 6 times a year, I host this workshop We start on a Sunday afternoon, and we go until a Wednesday afternoon. And we basically spend 4 days unpacking our sexual and emotional baggage. And we look at the negative emotions that so often drove us into the unhealthy places, whether that's, again, acting out too far to the left or shutting down too far to the right, but looking at the emotions that we so often swept under the rug. I don't think that we do a very good job in our society of teaching children how to cope with their emotions. And so oftentimes some of the things that we experience, the trials, the traumas, the tragedies, were never really processed. The losses were never really grieved. We just swept all those emotions under the rug, and we trip over them every time we walk through the living room of our life. So oftentimes what we're really all about is helping women identify what are the common patterns, kind of like what I said earlier, you know, who are the men that you have been intimate with and what do they all have in common? Or looking at different patterns, looking at behaviors, trying to basically create a big connect the dot grid and connect those dots and recognize what the big picture is. So let me just kind of give you a couple of examples from women that I've worked with. There was one woman who approached saying that she did not understand why she had struggled for a long time with lesbian fantasies. She said, I'm not a lesbian. I never want to be a lesbian. I'm happily married. I have a child. I want to stay faithful to my husband. So it wasn't that she had anything against homosexuality. She just didn't feel as if this was really part of her identity. So she just couldn't figure out why these fantasies seemed to be haunting her. And so we did a sexual history together, and nothing really waved a red flag at me as to why these fantasies would be present in her life. But through a Woman at the Well type experience, she was able to do a more broad life history of what are the negative emotions that I've experienced in my life and that I've probably swept under the rug and have never really grieved. And what I learned about her is that when she was 14, she had an 11-year-old sister who went to spend the night with friends one night, and lightning struck the roof of that house, and it burned to the ground, and everyone inside was killed, including her sister. As a result of her sister's death, her mother emotionally shut down, became a walking zombie pretty much the rest of her childhood. And so you can imagine that at a very pivotal age in her sexual development, 14 years old, she loses the two women who are closest to her sister through physical death and her mother through emotional death. So what are these lesbian fantasies trying to tell her? She's trying to recreate a sense of intimacy with a female that she was robbed of so suddenly and so tragically all those years earlier. And so learning to grieve the loss of her sister, because I asked her, you know, she went to the funeral, but beyond that, she just really didn't know what to do with those emotions. And her mother was so numb because of her own emotions that she just never really got any counseling. She was never able to process what that loss really meant in her life. So sometimes it's a matter of connecting with a counselor or a coach who knows a lot more about grief in the human psyche than we do to understand what kind of impact it really has on your thinking and your way of relating and behaving.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what's really bubbling up for me? I have a question that I would love to ask you, Shannon.
Sure.
When you brought up, some of this early childhood trauma, you know, I do work within the tapestry of adoption is what I call it. Like I had shared in my intro, and some of the issues that I have heard and seen throughout the years within the world of adoption is, you know, some huge emotional and sexual baggage that an adoptee can bring in to their relationships. And so what have you learned is a big challenge facing adoptees and their sexuality? Do you have any experience with any of that?
Yeah, very little, but the what I have had, I would love to share because it's been very, very powerful. I do have some coaching clients that were referred to me by a professional counselor here in the Tyler area. And I will, you know, certainly change the scenario and obviously not mention their names to protect their identity. But the issue was he continued to act out over and over outside of their marriage. And she could not understand why. And it was, you know, bewildering to both of them how they could love the Lord so much, be in service to him, be, you know, so involved in missions and in ministry and all of that kind of stuff. But yet he still just had, it felt like a supernatural draw toward college-age girls. And that was a huge red flag because as a youth pastor, you know, you can imagine how being drawn to, you know, teenage girls, that's kind of a taboo when you're a youth pastor, you know. And so we just work together on trying to figure out, you know, what's wrong in your marriage and, you know, are you not fulfilled? And you know, but then it was like, no, wait a minute, this represents something. And I just started asking just all the questions that I could think of to ask. And what I learned is that he had been adopted. And I asked what he knew about his mother, and the only thing that he knew was that she had gotten pregnant outside of wedlock and had given him up for adoption when she was only 18 or 19 years old. And I said, do you see the connection there? That the one thing that all these girls that you've been inappropriately intimate with have all been in that 18 to 19-year-old category. Do you think that maybe you're trying to recreate a scenario in order to win this time? Do you think maybe you're trying to recreate a sense of intimacy with that this is really all about the grieving that needs to take place in your spirit that you never had a relationship with your biological mother? He said, I never really thought about having any, you know, need for a relationship with her. He said, you know, I was adopted at birth, so I've just always assumed that my adoptive parents gave me everything that I needed. And I asked him, I said, have you ever been at a party where a baby was crying and no matter who held it, it would not stop until its biological mother held it? That it has a bond with that woman, that it was formed in her womb, and the baby knows her walk and knows the sound of her voice. You know, there is a bonding that takes place before that baby ever comes out of that womb. And so I said, can you imagine that when you were born, you were put into the arms of a woman that you didn't know her voice. You didn't know her walk. So even though she took care of you and did the best that she could as your adoptive mother, she wasn't your biological mother. And I do believe that on a subconscious level, that dynamic had a lot to do with his acting out. And since we discussed that possibility, he seems to have it a lot more under control because we are doing grief work about that adoption process. He is writing letters to his biological mother and to his adoptive mother. He's even considering contacting her, which is a huge step in his life, and his wife is thrilled to support him in that process. So you can see how I think that it does play a dynamic, or it can. I don't think that it always does, but I think that it certainly can, and we can't dismiss the possibility of, you know, of just that experience driving a person in a sexually inappropriate behavior if they don't know what else to do with that grief.
Absolutely, because it is a huge grief and loss issue. And, you know, even just raising that awareness that you are able to do with this couple, how huge for them to understand that, you know, the ripple effect of decisions that were made, you know, it can play out. I've spoken with adoptees who actually have gone through a counseling process, and it never even came up during their counseling with not with me because I'm not a counselor, but with another counselor that they were adopted.
And that almost makes you wonder if it shouldn't be one of the first questions that's asked.
Absolutely.
I believe that's
part of my mission, right?
So yeah, it's like if you're going to ask about their childhood experiences, start with birth. What happened to you immediately after birth? Were you raised by your biological parents, or were you adopted? That would be a logical first step.
Absolutely, because the first families, you know, that's a lot of firsts happen with the first families. It's the first heartbeat that you hear. It's the first smell. It's the first everything. And
yes.
So to deny that first family in the history, when we're talking about emotional, sexual, intimacy, you know, baggage that can come into our world, we can't dismiss that. And so thank you for that acknowledgement, you know, in the process, because I think it's really, really key and really important as we learn to unpack the emotional and sexual baggage that each one of us can carry into our relationship. We need to be able to go all the way back. We need to go back to the womb and really start looking at where did stuff start popping up and really raise awareness to those issues, because all of that secretism that can go around even the tapestry of adoption or past sexual partners or different inappropriate behaviors or whatever, all of that creates this, as you have talked about on your website and in your books, the suitcase of emotional and sexual baggage that we have an opportunity as we become more aware and kind of wake up to what's really going on in our life, start really owning our own stuff. Those are the things that we can start unpacking.
Yes.
And so
often, Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oftentimes people just kind of wallow in guilt over what they've done in their past, and they do want to just sweep it under the rug and ignore it. No, there's no need in resurrecting all that. But what you have to understand is why you did it in the first place. And so oftentimes people will just jump to labels of, well, I did it because I was a slut. I did it because I was a whore back then. I don't think that anybody should ever put that kind of label on themselves, just like you wouldn't put that label on any other human being. That would be a really mean, crass thing to do. It's just as mean to put it on yourself. You have to look beyond your weaknesses and recognize what psychological need were you trying to fulfill when you acted out in those ways. And for me personally, I had to realize that the reason that I was so disconnected from my father is when I was four, my 8-year-old sister died. And so he had shut down as a result of her death. And so did my brother, and to a great degree, my mom. But I think that she was able to, she was a lot stronger in her faith. So I think that she was able to connect with me a little bit more than the men in our family were able to. But the fact that the men shut down because of my sister's death, I had to be able to give them the grace, you know, to be human. I had to have some mercy on them. They were hurting. They didn't say, okay, let's get together and figure out how we can just deny Shannon of enough human contact that she'll get so desperate for connection that she'll start being promiscuous by the age of 15. That was never their intention. And it broke their hearts to see me going from guy to guy to guy. And they didn't understand it, and I didn't understand it. But in the years since then, with all the counseling that I've gone through, I totally understand it now, and I actually delight in helping women understand this. And the whole thing about there's a psychology behind everything that we do, that concept was so driven home for me recently. I do a marriage podcast with Dr. Corey Allen. It's called Sexy Marriage Radio. And Dr. Allen shared,
by the way.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Dr. Allen shared this powerful story about Child Protective Services bringing a little boy to him saying, we want you to diagnose him. We think that he's either mentally deranged or demon-possessed. And he said, well, what gives you that impression? And their response was, well, he keeps rubbing feces all over himself. So Dr. Allen does several sessions with him, and after that time, he came back to CPS and said, my diagnosis is not that he's mentally deranged or demon-possessed. He said, I actually think this is the most brilliant child I've ever met. And they said, how in the world could you come to that conclusion? And he said, well, I asked him about every foster home he had ever been in. And without exception, he had been sexually abused in every single one until he started rubbing feces on himself. In other words, there was a psychological reason why he did this really gross and disgusting thing. It was for survival. It was for self-protection. We do crazy things to fulfill needs that we perceive, and we will go to great lengths to get those needs filled. And so you have to understand what the need is. So for them to understand that this little boy had been sexually abused and his need was to not be sexually abused anymore, it makes perfect sense, doesn't it, Leanne?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That self-preservation piece is huge.
Yep.
And
survival
instinct.
Really
is. Absolutely. And we will do what we can. We're either going to self-preserve or we're going to self-sabotage.
Yes.
Two of those things
yes.
can really happen, right? And so when you see the Women at the Well workshops that you do, Shannon, how does a woman know if she's a woman at the well?
And, I'm so glad you
what
asked.
What are the signs? What are the signs that
yeah.
her life is kind of out of control? I mean, she's probably at an adult age, probably not rubbing feces on herself. That's not like this huge indicator that there's something major going on, right? So what's going on?
Well, I mean, just thinking back of the history of some of the women who've come through the program, there was one in particular, she struggled with an eating disorder. She had totally shut down sexually. She just had such a poor body image that she could not fathom ever having a healthy sexual identity. And so it was a really successful 4 days for her to recognize that one of the roots of all of this was that she suspected sexually abused by a family member when she was very, very young. And so the eating disorder was really just kind of an attempt to control a situation that she felt very out of control with. Another gal, she was currently having an affair. But so oftentimes women are like, well, I don't know if I really need to come to something like that because I haven't, I haven't been unfaithful to my husband and we are having sex right now. Well, sometimes it's a matter of, have you really had peace and closure with what you have experienced in your past? And there was a woman apply recently, very young, in her early 20s, and she said to me, I'm not sure if this is really the right workshop for me because I've actually only had two sexual partners. And I said, well, you know, just talk to me about who these men were and why you had a relationship with them. Well, it turns out that it was her youth pastor that she had a sexual affair with, and he was married with three children. And he left his wife and children for her, but she was afraid that if she married this guy without having ever experienced anyone else in her life, that she might regret that, so she had an affair on him. It's like, you need a workshop like this, babe, because what you've told me is that you haven't had very good reason for having the sexual experiences that you have had, that they've both been very dysfunctional and very inappropriate. So it could be just looking at what kind of sex have you had. Have you had inappropriate, or have you had sex at inappropriate times with inappropriate people or in inappropriate ways? You know, is it something that you so crave that you can't control your urges? Are you looking to pornography? Are you looking to other people outside of your marriage relationship? Like this one woman who came, she was bewildered by the fact that she had become addicted to porn, and she was very embarrassed when I asked the question, what exactly do you surf for? And she said, well, I'm surfing for porn. And I said, no, you don't understand. There's lots of different kinds of porn out there. What words do you put in the Google search bar? And she took a deep breath, and she was, you know, just mortified to have to say it out loud, but she found the courage, praise God, and she said, I'm looking for threesomes, but it's not the kind that you would probably think, that what I'm searching for is usually two men and a woman together. And so I asked her, what kind of experiences have you had? What was your first sexual experience? Let's just go back to the beginning. Well, she was sexually abused by her own older brother. Her parents were high on drugs and locked up in their bedroom most of the time, and they weren't there to protect her. And she said, I remember fantasizing that my younger brother would walk in the room and startle my older brother, and that the whole thing would stop and that I wouldn't be abused anymore. I said, so in other words, you started fantasizing about two men and one woman long, long time before you even knew what that even meant. And she hadn't made the connection between what she longed for because of survival in her childhood and what she was fantasizing about or surfing for as an adult. There's always a connection between what happened in our childhood and what we fantasize about in adulthood, because sexual fantasy is really just the brain's way of trying to heal itself from past trauma. So one of the things that a person can actually do is if you make a list of all of your deepest wounds, like do your 20 most pivotal moments in life, and when you look at the things that impacted you most deeply, and then you make a list of your most common sexual fantasies, those two lists will almost be a mirror image of each other. That it's like you are trying to recreate a scenario in order to win this time, in order to heal an old wound, in order to just regain a sense of power and control that you were robbed of at a young age.
Absolutely. Wow. Very huge. And, you know, this isn't something that gets talked about, right?
Mm-mm.
Very often within the church, it doesn't get talked about even between women, even in friendships, right? Because of
right.
The shame
and
the
released
guilt
this,
and the embarrassment.
Uh-huh. Right. When I released this information, it's in a book called The Fantasy Fallacy, about exposing the deeper meaning behind sexual thoughts. There were so many pastors and counselors who contacted me and said, why did we never learn this? Like, we never understood this about fantasy. And, you know, I know that the 50 Shades of Grey phenomenon has hit our culture like a tidal wave, and people keep asking, why are people so fascinated by that? The author actually did a brilliant job of bringing that concept to life, in that the reason that this guy was so into S&M and whips and chains and bondage and all that kind of stuff is because he was abused as a child. And so as an adult, he wanted to recreate a scenario where he was winning this time, where instead of being abused, he would be the abuser. And so we, as a society, it is so important for us to more fully understand the impact that sexual fantasy and that sexuality in general has on our lives and on our relationships, because when something impacts your life and you're married, it impacts your marriage. And when something impacts your marriage, it impacts your family. And when something impacts your family, that impacts society. I mean, it just has so many negative ripple effects. Like this one gentleman who contacted me shortly after The Fantasy Fallacy released, and he said, can I just share a little bit about my history with you and what I have figured out about myself since reading The Fantasy Fallacy? And he said, we've been married 25 years, and he said, we haven't had sex in almost 5 years. He said, the first year of our marriage, my wife caught me looking at pornography, and it has been an addiction I have never been able to let go of. And she has always thought this is about her. She's not pretty enough. She's not sexy enough. He said, Shannon, nothing could be further from the truth. My wife is gorgeous. He said, so I've been asking myself, what happened in my childhood that causes me to fear human intimacy and to look to pornography instead of a real woman? And what he realized is that when he was a teenager, he was approached by three different men wanting to have sex with him. One was a pastor, one was a teacher, I don't remember what the other one was, but it was older men in authority over him. And each time he had a red flag in his spirit that said, run. And he did, so he never let that happen, so he assumed that that didn't affect him. But it did affect him. It taught him that if ever someone is interested in being intimate with you, you need to self-preserve, you need to run, and that was exactly what he was doing throughout his marriage, is running to a safe place, what he considered a safer place, pornography, rather than risking the vulnerability of human intimacy. And he said, Shannon, after 25 years, just making that connection right there gives me hope that my marriage may actually be able to be salvaged, and he was going into counseling as a result. So making those connections, you have no idea how it's going to impact your life from here on out if you'll open yourself up to the possibility that there can be healing for all these old wounds that project you into negative directions.
Well, absolutely, Shannon. We can get so wrapped up, you know, within all of that, and if we are silent about it, then we kind of keep swimming in our own story. And, you know, within
yeah,
the coaching
it's a good way to put
world,
it.
Right? We do. We swim in the story. And, you know, it's hard to even come up for air. We're just, you know, kind of treading this water trying to survive when in actuality we can really, you know, we were created to be overcomers. And we can be an overcomer within the power of our Savior. And so, you know, within the coaching realm, we talk about the little gremlin in your life, right? The I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough mm-hmm. to talk about my past, or I'm not good enough to receive the love that I know
yep.
I so desire. We can think about the assumptions that we make on our stories, the interpretations that we have made over our past experiences, or the limiting beliefs that can really come in and completely stop us from even opening our mouth and using our voice to seek out forward movement and healing within the context of our sexuality or our emotional state that we're in. And, you know, oftentimes, just like you had the privilege, I'm sorry, you had that privilege of having your aerobic instructor or yoga instructor
mm-hmm.
come up to you and
mm-hmm.
say, hey, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's really important as we live out our lives in authenticity with other people, to have people in our lives that we trust, to not be
yes.
afraid to put our feet to the fire, I call it, or hold us accountable, or that we can feel safe to bounce things off of them, because oftentimes they hold a mirror. If they hold up that mirror to us, then we can really see what's going on, because oftentimes
that's
we spend a lot of time denying it, and we're sleeping through life mm-hmm. instead of really being awake through life.
That's just it. Is so oftentimes we can't see the forest because we're still staring at this tree right in front of us. We can't see the big picture. And I love how the body of Christ can actually function together in that role to give you an aerial view of what's really been happening throughout your lifetime, that when we get these eight women together, that's how many women come into the Women at the Well workshops. When we get these eight women together and they start taking off their masks and being incredibly real and laying their cards on the table and being honest about what kind of experiences they've had throughout their childhood and how they've acted out in their adulthood or how they've shut down in their adulthood. It's amazing how so many other people around the circle can totally nail what's going on in that woman's life, but yet she couldn't see it for herself. And as soon as that truth is spoken, it just so resonates with her, but it takes someone else on the outside looking in to kind of label that fish. When you're swimming around in the fishbowl with it, it really is kind of hard to know what's going on around you.
Absolutely. And by you opening up your story and using your voice, it oftentimes provides permission, if you will, for other people to share theirs too. And
oh,
within
so.
That, then we start raising awareness and some of these behaviors and patterns that we have lived with for our entire lives, all of a sudden they can come to a halt and we can start creating a new life for us. and stop swimming in the story. Shannon, it looks like we have a caller. Can I? I'm going to go ahead and see if they have a question for us.
Sure.
Just one moment. Hi, 229. You're live on the air with Leanne and Shannon.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi. How are you doing? I was just listening to the show, riding down the road.
Okay. Okay, no question or comment. Great. Thank you. I just wanted to be sure. Thank you so much for listening in.
All right.
We appreciate you
being
here.
Thanks for checking.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, great. So, Shannon, you know, we are almost at the top of the hour. Can you believe it?
Time flies when you're having fun.
Well, it does. And, you know, we're raising awareness all over the place, and it's super-duper important. And I love that we're able to talk about this frankly, in a real dignified and honoring way, and in a way to provide tremendous amount of service to our listeners. And
I hope
so.
A passage of scripture that I would love to leave people with is we have to remember that Jesus himself was tempted in every way, but was without sin. And so, you know, a lot of people want to say, oh, but he wasn't tempted sexually. He wasn't one of those kind of people. No, he was fully human, and I can guarantee you he was tempted sexually. And we can approach his throne of grace with confidence because God understands our sexuality far more than we do, that you don't ever need to hang your head in shame before the throne of the King. He is the lifter of our heads and the healer of our hearts, and he's an elixir to our soul. So once we open ourselves to the possibility that a more intimate love relationship with Jesus Christ is the first step we need to take, it just has positive ripple effects. It helps us heal those old wounds. It helps us connect with our spouse on a much deeper level. It helps us be much better parents and you know, encouragers with our circle of friends in our church. And so pursue healing at all costs because you just can't underestimate the power that it will create in your life.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, when you talk about creating that healing and that power and really, really connecting, I have another question for you. What does it look like for a woman at the well to go from becoming the woman at the well to a woman who is well? A well
yeah, I call
woman.
Them well women instead of women
yeah,
at the
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
They're
so,
well women.
So, yeah, so you're eight women, this intimate group that you bring together. What happened?
They leave on Wednesday as well, women. They certainly do. I think that she exudes a confidence and a passion for God and for her husband and for a lifestyle of righteousness and integrity. She's not an uptight prude, and those who came in as prudes, they leave a little bit looser and ready to go home and connect with their husbands and enjoy all the pleasure that they've robbed themselves of all these years. And a lot of men listening may be going, wait a minute, if I send my wife to that workshop, she'll come home a more sexually confident wife? Yes, I think so. That's when men are like, who do I write the check to? There is a reason why your wife has shut down. And it's not because she's a straight-laced prude, and it's not because she doesn't love you. It's because she has issues in her life that she's never even realized how it has impacted her sexuality. And if she can get to the root of that, I think that it will cause a lot of great fruit to blossom in her life, and that will directly impact your marriage for sure.
Well, absolutely. Just like, you know, hurts, habits, and hang-ups can have a ripple effect that causes us either to act out or shut down.
Mm-hmm.
The ripple effect of healing really can bring us to a place where we do exude passion for life and for marriage, for motherhood, for being in service to other people. And
exactly.
Really, you know, giving ourselves, right, those 4 days to just get away with another group of women to really dig out those issues and work through them, talk through them, pray through them, cry through them. I'm sure there's a tremendous
yes.
amount of
lots of
you know,
tears,
emotion
lots
that gets
of laughter,
released.
Lots of hugs and comfort. Yeah.
Absolutely. And what
we try to recreate
place.
That family environment to ask for what you need and to receive the comfort that you were never able to, you know, to get in your original family of origin. My philosophy is that, you know, some people say, why do you consider yourself a missionary for sexuality? Why is that such an important topic? Aren't there more important missions that you could embark upon? I say that a woman who goes through sexual healing will so positively impact her marriage. And a stronger marriage makes for a stronger family. And a stronger family makes for a stronger society. So this really is my contribution to society in a really weird way, is to be the sex lady and help couples have the great sex life that God intended for them to have.
Love it. Beautiful. What great thoughts. Well, we are just about at the top of the hour here, which is pretty crazy to me to think about that, you know, we have been able to talk about this emotional sexual baggage. We've been able to identify a lot for our listeners about what acting out is and what holding back is and withdrawing. We've been able to raise awareness for different addictions, for different abuses, and really understanding that it's important that we do not ever stop talking about this, because this is what brings us to that place of healing and really unpacking that sexual and emotional baggage that can prevent us from fully living. And, you know, in my world, it's leaving the legacy, or living the legacy that you want to leave. And, you know, I just want to challenge our listeners. Is the legacy that you want to leave one of withholding and acting out, or is it one of freedom and wholeness? And just really want to encourage you to seek that out. And so, Shannon, tell the listeners again, real quick, how they can get a hold of you if they would like to reach out to you or find out more about your Women at the Well workshop.
Sure. They can go to shannonetheridge.com, and they can learn about our books, our DVDs. They can learn about the coaching services that we provide. They can learn about the Women at the Well workshops. They can also learn about the BLAST mentorship program that we offer for aspiring writers and speakers, because there's probably a lot of people listening in to how you are walking the talk and how I'm walking the talk, and they're thinking, I have a story. I want to create a platform to glorify God and to bring healing into people's lives. Well, the BLAST program stands for Building Leaders, Authors, Speakers, and Teachers, and we want to help you build that platform too, because the more of us who are speaking out and bringing healing into people's lives and bringing glory to God, the sooner Jesus can come back and we can all go home. Amen?
Amen. There you go. Well, thank you, Shannon, so much. And I do want to just take just a moment and let you know, listeners, about some upcoming shows here on Life Coach Radio Network. Please join Coach Mark Shaw on 4-6 at 9 p.m. for Mark My Words. Also, Fun to Fortune at noon with Coach Jeff on the 8th of April. And I, Leanne Parsons, the Walk Your Talk Coach, am going to be on again live on the 17th, which is the Thursday of April, and I am incredibly privileged once again to bring on a phenomenal guest. I am going to be joined on the 17th by our Albuquerque's own Steve Stucker. He is our Albuquerque, New Mexico weatherman. We see him every day on the news, and he is also our Balloon Fiesta icon. You will recognize him if you have ever seen the Balloon Fiesta. He's the guy that wears the really cool big hat with all the Balloon Fiesta pins everywhere and the white jacket. And I am super honored to have him on my show on the 17th. And we are going to be chatting about the different ministries and community involvement that he has with youth, with men's ministry. He is acquainted and intimately involved within the tapestry of adoption and foster care. And so we're going to be having a fabulous conversation with Steve Stucker on the 17th. So I encourage all of the listeners to join in and listen as well. And Shannon, we are at the close of our hour. Again, my heartfelt gratitude to you for agreeing to come on and not only sharing your heart with me back in Nashville, which gave me just this magnet to want to get to know you, but really taking that time to share your heart, your ministry, and your message with our listeners here on Life Coach Radio Network.
It is my great privilege. Thank you for giving me the opportunity, Leanne, and God bless you and everything that you do, and your clients as well, and your listening audience as well.
Thank you so much. And listeners, I look forward to seeing you or hearing you and you hearing me again on April the 17th, 2014. I just encourage each one of you, until we meet again, to live the legacy you want to leave.